different point of view, a better point of view. We are joined by a senior NBA writer for The Athletic, host of the Tampering Podcast. And again, one of those guys that I consider a very good friend of the program. It is Sam Amick. What's going on, Sam? How are you?
Romy, what's up, brother? Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good, dude. Thanks for doing it. So let me start with the Lakers, Sam, obviously. They lost last night. They dropped to 8-7. 15 games in, that's not a huge sample size. LeBron has certainly missed some time. As you look at them so far, what are your early thoughts and impressions of this particular Lakers squad?
I mean, the LeBron stuff is huge. You certainly would have thought in his absence that, you know, like Russ has had some moments where he found his way, and you know, that ability for him to play like himself, I think, should have yielded a little more. This is a guy, as you know, that at his best, you know, was getting the Thunder to the playoffs as kind of the main guy. And with AD by his side, you would have thought they could make it work. But they still struggled. You know, the parts seem to be mismatched for now. You know, they knew the entire time, making that move in the summer, that they described Russ as a 16-game player versus 82, meaning come playoff time, they think this formula will be kind of gelled and will finally work. But, you know, so far, it's obviously a mixed bag.
So do you think it will? If you had to project, do you think it's going to get much better than it is right now, or is this essentially what it is?
I mean, it's title or bust, right? So, like, if the question is, will it work to the tune of a championship? No. My prediction at the moment is I would, I don't know which team I would pick, but I'd go with somebody else. If it's Lakers or the field, certainly picking the field. They'll win a lot of games, and it's, you know, the cliche that is true about betting against LeBron being a bad idea. But the other thing here is that, you know, you now have this reality that LeBron has had various injuries multiple times over the course of the past couple of years. So, you know, these are not outliers, and the prospect of LeBron having to not only manage minutes, but not being superhuman as we felt like he was at different points, you know, before he ran into these things, that element is not going to go away, and I think is going to be a factor all the way through the year.
We're talking to Sam Amick, a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. Sam, you and Andre Iguodala recently had a conversation about the top 75 players in NBA history and where Kyrie Irving ranks on that list. I've always thought that Iggy was one of the more interesting, different guys to talk to. What was it like for you to talk basketball history with him, given who he's played against and with over the course of his entire career?
I mean, I loved it. It's funny. The Warriors falling off, so to speak, meaning just from title contention, and also Andre going to, it never actually went to Memphis, but Memphis and then Miami being away from the Warriors, you know, that took one of my favorite interview subjects out of my space, because when they were rolling and going to the finals 5 straight years, they, you know, between Andre and Draymond Green, those were the two guys I enjoyed connecting with the most on the Warriors. And any conversation with Andre is fun, not only because he's a very interesting, smart guy, but because he keeps you on your toes. And I tried to write some of that where, you know, we get into the debate about Kyrie Irving and Andre tweeting that he should be top 20 all time. And when I challenge that, you know, he immediately fires back and says, all right, give me your 20. And I'm like, well, I'm not ready with my 20.
Right.
You know, especially at this stage in life, he's 37. You know, he's just kind of matured and seen everything you can see in this league. So always enjoy talking to him, even if I didn't agree with all of his opinions.
I agree with you. And I had Sam Draymond on this show not long ago for the first time in a moment or two. He was so good. He is still so good to talk to. I know exactly what you're talking about. Sam Amick is joining us. Sam, what about the Ben Simmons situation? Like, there was a period of time when it was tedious and it was awkward, and then it started to look like maybe there was going to be some progress. And then roughly 1 month into the season, it doesn't seem like that anymore. What's it seem like to you right now? How would you characterize that situation right now?
So I wrote about it at length today, and you know, the short version of it is I don't see him getting traded anytime soon. Certainly things always heat up at the deadline, and who knows what might come the Sixers' way. But you know, the trade prospect is fascinating, because what I learned that I didn't know previously was, you know, it's not just a case of the Sixers and Daryl Morey waiting for somebody like Damian Lillard and nobody else will get the job done for a trade. They have an internal list of roughly 30 players that they would feel good about trading Ben for. It sounds like a big number, but then you got to remember, no, we're talking about guys who we all know are not available. So Steph Curry is on that list, and LeBron's on that list. So you get to 30 real quick, but, you know, none of those guys are available now, and they have this opinion that within the next year or two, 5 or 10 of them might break free, all of which is to say, like, this is why their messaging continues to be that it's going to take a while, and they have a long view here. Meanwhile, you got Ben and the question of, is he going to play? And even though his agent, Rich Paul, had mentioned, you know, to Arsham Sharania last week that he just wanted to get him on the floor, when I kind of followed up on that situation, the message I got was that it's not happening anytime soon, if ever, for Philly. So it continues to just be oceans apart with no clarity about how this thing turns out.
Sam Amick is joining us. All right, Sam, you laid out kind of the team approach. What do you make of Ben himself? Like, he couldn't play due to a bad back, and then there was the mental health component. What do you make of how Simmons and his team have handled it?
I think even they would admit that, you know, the plan that they chose didn't work, and now is backfiring. Now, one thing that I think all of us in the media and even fans, you know, should, because of the time we're living in, like, I'm not going to question Ben's mental health. We've seen, you know, we've seen him struggle on the floor with elements that seem to be mental about doing his job. So, but what the way it's kind of getting framed now is that, listen, mental health was part of this conversation all the way through, but Ben himself was not exactly eager to lead with that, to come and say, I'm struggling, I need help, here's why. So they focused on basketball, you know, the history that he had with the Sixers. They focused on the imperfect fit with Joel Embiid. And I think they thought that taking that power play approach would accomplish what Ben said he needed, which was a new start. And then when it didn't accomplish that, you had to then essentially, and by the way, when he started losing money, you know, you then had to go to plan B or plan C, and you're emphasizing the mental health, and it's a tough sell, even if it might be very substantive. Now, the other thing here is that, you know, some folks say, okay, if he gets traded, is his mental health all of a sudden better? And I get that, but the bottom line is, like, he's got a lot of complicated history with this group of people and doesn't want to work there anymore, but, you know, he's got a contract with $140 million. I've never seen a situation like this, Jim.
We're talking to Sam Amick. You know, Sam, you and I are not mental health professionals, but I agree with you. It's something that you have to take very seriously. I mean, just from an amateur's point of view, or a layman's point of view, like, he's going to face so much pressure and so much scrutiny if, in fact, he does get back on the floor. And then you couple that with the way last season ended and him passing up a dunk late in Game 7 in a really tough town already. I mean, doesn't that seem like a basis for legitimate mental health concerns, him getting back on the floor with that team?
Yeah, I think so. But it also, so, okay, let's legitimize his struggle and his experience. So then let's go to the team side and say, okay, so what's expected? Are they supposed to just take a bad deal? And I don't think my answer is yes. That's why, you know, it will be interesting. Let's say the February 10th trade deadline comes and goes and there's no deal. I think the conversation at that point will pick up with the Players Association, with the NBA, you know, about possible involvement there. Is arbitration coming down the line? The league, for now, seems to be fairly hands-off, that they view this as a situation between Philly and its player, and the contract is with the Sixers and not directly with the NBA. But this is new ground, you know what I mean? Like, mental health is being handled differently now than by teams than it was. Like, if you go back to 2012, Royce White, you know, speaking his truth about his struggles with the Rockets, ironically with Daryl Morey, there wasn't much infrastructure on the team side to navigate those waters. There does, you know, more exists now. It's certainly imperfect, and now you're seeing the difficulty, because if Ben says, I'm going to therapy and I'm working my way through it, but it might take me 6 months, the team is obviously going to get impatient, because it's not like a broken leg where you can keep checking the x-ray and just see if it's healed.
I think that's all fair. Sam Amick joining us. Sam, before you go, normally I would not necessarily think to jump this onto a list of questions for you, but I'm actually really interested in what's going on in Sacramento. They lost a halftime lead last night. They've lost 5 of their last 6. What is your sense as to where things stand with this team?
Not great. They're pretty the revelations or the new developments from years past are they're fairly openly, you know, making it clear that getting to the playoffs is a priority. And the unspoken part is like, and the failure to do that will certainly cost people their jobs. And first and foremost, Luke Walton, their coach. And, you know, that is new. In the past, last year, they kind of looked at it like a little bit of a lost year, a gap year, a developmental year, partly because of COVID, partly because they had young guys they were trying to get going in the right direction. But they have not been in the playoffs since 2006, longest streak in the NBA, second longest, I believe, in pro sports, only behind the Mariners' 20-year streak. So it's come time for them to get to the playoffs. And as far as Luke and his situation that we wrote about the other day, I think he certainly still could make it to the end of the year, but they've got to avoid long losing streaks. That's the one thing. They lost. They had 2 9-game losing streaks last season, and organizationally, I think there's no kind of tolerance or patience for anything like that happening again.
Senior NBA writer for The Athletic. He is host of the Tampering Podcast. He is a good friend of the program. He is Sam Amick. Sam, I appreciate you and the relationship as always. Thanks so much for doing that, Sam.
Thanks, Romy. Be good.
You too, Sam. Sam Amick. Covering a lot of ground. The Lakers, Ben Simmons, Sacramento, and the way he makes it sound, and I don't suspect that this is not the case. Luke Walton probably is coaching for his job right now. They have not been to the postseason since 06. Second longest streak in sports, all of sports, to the Mariners. If you're being compared to the Mariners, when it comes to futility, it's going to cost somebody their job. I hope not. I hope they get that thing turned around.